everybody, welcome to the show. And of course, my guest today, David Pepos, riding high from the wrap up of your Punisher run. Welcome to the show, man.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, man. I'm excited to be here and excited to catch up.
My pleasure. Yeah. Oh, man. So, creator of Joe Garrison, what? How does it feel to have a full run of an original character of yours under the Marvel umbrella?
Yeah.
Under your belt.
Oh, it was such a wonderful experience getting to write Joe Garrison's introduction to the Marvel universe. I'm really pleased with how that miniseries came together. It was one of those things that. It was a tight runway to get that story across. I've had some people ask questions like, oh, did it wrap up early? And no, you know, we pitched it as four issues. I wrote it as four issues.
Nice.
I'd finished writing those four well before the first issue ever dropped. So I'm really happy with how it came together. Working with somebody like Dave Wachter on the artwork and a book like that, and Dan Brown on colors, it really was such an incredible experience. And I've heard some pretty cool rumblings about where Joe might show up next. It sounds very exciting.
Nice.
So I'm very excited for our all new Punisher to have some legs and to have some other creators playing with him as well. I couldn't be happier with the response to that book. People seem to really rally around the character, and I think they really kind of started to understand where we were going with it, which is really, you know, very much a back to basics kind of approach, while introducing a character that's kind of carved out his own individual niche, separate from Frank Castle. So I'm so happy with how that series came together. And I'm very grateful to all the fans that made that book such a success.
Yeah, it's really developed a nice following with some fans of this original character. I particularly loved the introduction of his kind of Jigsaw counterpart.
Yeah.
You and I talked off mic about just like him being introduced, and I was like, oh man, like I love the design, I love the character. This is going back a little while, but like when he was first introduced. But
it was sort of if I had pitched Joe Garrison as kind of the John Wick of S.H.I.E.L.D., mm-hmm. I said, you know, he needs his high table to fight against. And so coming up with the idea of Jigsaw as sort of this anarchic syndicate that, tries to shape the global trajectory through chaos and discord. It was a really fun way to introduce that character and to give him kind of a long running crusade for future adventures. When my editor Tom Brevoort approached me with this assignment and said, you know, we want to come up with a new Punisher, the big question was, how do you make a character go from being just in his own personal pursuit of vengeance, his own personal vendetta, how do you get that mission to go wide? And I think having a group like Jigsaw, who kind of has their fingers in all these different pies, it sort of gives Joe an organic way to go on any number of adventures that really kind of reinforces what I consider to be a big appeal of the Punisher, which is, you know, it's one man surviving based on his wits and his arsenal and his tenacity, but being able to kind of point him in a direction where he can be a Punisher for the little guy.
Yeah.
Fighting serial killers and assassins and corrupt corporations and all sorts of villains that I think everybody can agree upon. Jigsaw is a really cool way to kind of get Joe on that crusade. So I'm very happy with how people responded to that. And I think, Dave and Dan really kind of took the ball and ran with it for that character. The designs looked so cool. And the colors in particular was such an interesting choice. And it was not one that I would have initially imagined. Mm. But when I saw it on the page, I was like, oh, Dan absolutely knocked it out of the park. So yeah, I'm very proud of that book. I think it's one of the most beautiful looking books I've had the pleasure of working on. And yeah, just being able to kind of add a brick to the wall of the House of Ideas, it's a big honor and a big responsibility, and I'm glad that readers seem to have appreciated the kinds of effort and the love that we put into that book.
And you couldn't have had a better foreman when you were laying those foundations, working with Tom Brevoort, because I love that you got like new blood with like this seasoned veteran of the Marvel bullpen who is guiding the series along with you. How much fun was it working with Tom? Like
I can't say enough good things about working with Tom Brevoort. He's been my editor for most of the assignments that I've worked on at Marvel to date. He was my editor on Savage Avengers. He was my editor on Moon Knight City of the Dead. He was my editor on Avengers Unlimited and Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood. And so having him be my editor on Punisher was amazing. I respect the hell out of him. He's been doing this for so long that he really has a great sense of story sensibility. But right. Also, I think it's his values that he brings to the table, particularly in kind of what makes a character a hero. And I think that was something that he and I discussed at length when coming up with Joe. Not just how do you make a character that could go toe-to-toe with Frank Castle in terms of his training, but also how do you kind of readdress the mission of the Punisher in the year 2024, but doing it fresh. And I think that was something that Tom and I really talked a lot about, was that Frank Castle, by the time you beat him in Amazing Spider-Man 129, I believe that's the issue number, is that, he's already made the decision to become Punisher. He's clearly racked up a body count. This is a guy who has no problem kind of killing the criminal element.
Right.
But I think having a Punisher who's fresh at this, who we're watching him come to that decision. And I think the fact that we're placing him squarely in that he's got to fight for the little guy. He's got to fight for the defenseless. And I think that's something that I think in the popular perception has maybe gotten overlooked. Mm-hmm. And I think, but that's something that really kind of, I think, sets Joe apart, and I think keeps him from being just a lunatic with a gun.
Right. Exactly.
It's that there is still, a higher calling for all of this. And that, it's not just violence for violence's sake. It's that, there are millions of people like Joe's family out there. There are millions of victims. And there are all sorts of kind of monsters hiding in the shadows that the law can't or won't address. And so when that happens, you need somebody like the Punisher to settle the score.
Exactly. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. I felt like we were in very good hands with Tom. And he really kind of helped us shape the story in the best possible way to really kind of give Joe a series of adventures to go on to make sure that like we weren't just kind of like belaboring the point with just one adventure, that it was we would kind of show readers the variety of different stories that Joe could go on and kind of watching him rack up a few victories along this original origin story to really put him on the path for any future adventures that he's got coming down the line.
Right. Now, as both of you are fans, him being also a wealth of knowledge, he's a vault of information. Did you ever get into any like conversations where it's like, I want to do this? He's like, I'm afraid we can't do that because in West Coast Avengers number 187, you see, this is what, was it challenging to have to come up through that, up against that kind of.
I think the big challenge is not so much continuity stuff. I think Tom knows when to kind of give some latitude in that. Although the one time that he told me that I had somebody's powers wrong, I'd written something in Avengers Unlimited. I had a sequence where it was Drax the Destroyer punches out Ego the Living Planet, that Ant-Man shrinks down Ego the Living Planet. And that was because Tom had told me the original version was it was going to be a riff on the Hawkeye Ant-Man cover, but it was Gamora firing Ant-Man and an Arrow. And I was like, oh, and then Ant-Man can grow super big and punch out Ego. And I was told Ant-Man does not grow. That's an invention for the movies. So I kind of had to rework that. But no, I think the big challenge for anything really at Marvel is just figuring out like what characters are available in any particular time.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, like this origin was going on kind of concurrently with like the ongoing gang war storyline in the Spider-Man office. And so just getting a sense of, you know, what characters were available. And if anything, that kind of really gave me good incentive to go off the beaten path a little bit more. Characters like The Offer or Fear Master or Bushwhacker.
Yeah.
And the characters of the Night Shift. Or, you know, Mr. Hyde, characters that weren't being used in that sweeping gang war storyline. Also kind of giving Joe his own rogues gallery a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. Which is essential, I think, to a new character. You got to give him his own kind of like world to live in while also being set against the larger, you know, interconnected universe.
So I think that's an ongoing challenge, is just because like as a writer, you don't always know where the bodies are buried, and that's what your editors are there for.
Exactly.
Is they can say, hey, you know, like for example, I had brought up the owl at one point. It's like, oh, hey, like the owl's actually kind of being used in this gang war storyline. So like, is there anybody else that could kind of fit that similar characterization that you could still tell your story? And that's how I unearthed the offer from Paul Cornell's criminally underrated Wolverine run.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, I think that's, but I think Tom is very good at stuff like that because, like you said, he's a wealth of encyclopedic knowledge. I know when I wrote my Fantastic Four two-parter for Tom during Judgment Day, Tom was really instrumental in that. I had pitched Die Hard at the Baxter Building with Sue Storm, but we were kind of hitting our heads against the wall for a while about what villain, who was available and who would fit in a two-issue storyline. And it was Tom who recommended Weebly at Midas, and immediately, as soon as he said it, like the story immediately clicked in my head. I was like, that's a perfect choice. She's kind of the anti-Sue, and that Sue is like kind of defined by, you know, how she steps up for her family, whereas Weebly Ed is somebody who kind of has, you know, been so scarred by her family history. So it was a nice counterpoint. But I think you know, Tom is, he's done this for so long that I really try to listen to him whenever I can, and really kind of take as much information as possible, because you know, I think he really understands why heroes have endured for as long as they have. And I think the big thing that he constantly impresses upon me is you know, people in capes punching other people in capes, that doesn't make you a hero. What it is that you're protecting civilians, you're looking out for the little guy, you're protecting the defenseless. And that's something that I think is often overlooked, and that can kind of turn especially superhero or other genre media into something that's like very dynastic.
Right.
And while that, you know, there are certain properties that works for, you know, like the Inhumans, for example, you know, sometimes you still, it's easy to forget the human element of it all.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, characters like, you know, like Spider-Man with his supporting cast, or the Flash with his supporting cast, you know, that's very important. And that's what kind of gets us rooting for a hero beyond just all of the action and spectacle.
Yeah. So moving towards upcoming projects.
Yeah.
You got Space Ghost coming in May. Let's talk about Space Ghost.
Yeah.
From Dynamite. I'm thrilled with this concept of like bringing Space Ghost back into the hands of comic book fans. And so I won't even speculate. Where is Space Ghost? What is the concept? Is it a reset? Is it a reboot? Where are we going with this?
This is a brand new jumping on point. So if you've never read any Space Ghost before, you don't have to read anything in order to enjoy our book. That said, if you're a fan of the original cartoon, you'll find a lot to love in there as well. The way that I kind of have described our take on Space Ghost is it's somewhere tonally in between Batman the Animated Series and Batman the Long Halloween. In that for those who aren't familiar with Space Ghost or only know of him as a talk show host, he was a cosmic adventurer created by the legendary Alex Toth for Hanna-Barbera. And that original cartoon came out the same year as Adam West's Batman. So you see a lot of shared DNA between those in terms of the tone of that era. And so for me, you know, when I was approached by Dynamite to write this series, it was, my thinking was, okay, how do we take the energy and the vibes and the amazing character concepts from the original 60s cartoon, and how do we bring that into the 21st century? So we're really kind of taking those original cartoons, which ran very quickly. For anyone who's watched them, they're only 5 or 6 minutes a pop. So there's not really a lot of time to dig into any character's history or backstory. There's no continuity, so to speak, of.
Right.
And so that was something that I wanted to address in this series. Is in particular, for me, the thing that really stood out about Space Ghost, he's got his power bands and he's got his Inviso belt, and those are very cool. We'll be getting into those in the book. But the thing that really stood out to me was that in a world where, say, Batman had Robin, Space Ghost actually had three sidekicks. He had Jan and Jace and their pet monkey Blip.
Right.
And back then in the 60s, nobody questioned it. You know, that was just kind of, that was the trope. And also there was not enough time to explain, well, how do Jan and Jace, you know, wind up in Space Ghost's orbit? And if you stop to think about it in the year 2024, that comes across as like wildly irresponsible. Throw them in the thick of things.
Yeah.
And so that's something I really wanted to address in this series, is that you'll see, without spoiling too much, our first issue is about how Space Ghost winds up encountering Jan and Jace for the first time. And sort of how do they go from being these rescued orphans to becoming trusted sidekicks and partners in their own right, to eventually kind of becoming this unorthodox found family. And I think for people who really enjoyed my work on Savage Avengers, which was also about unorthodox found families, and you're really going to like what we have in store for Space Ghost. And we're able to kind of take that counterpoint of how does Space Ghost, how does his dynamic evolve with the twins on an issue-to-issue basis? And we're able to kind of juxtapose that against this, an amazing gauntlet of iconic villains. You know, that's something in particular that really stood out to me, is that there have been comic interpretations of Space Ghost before, many of them fairly short-lived, you know, or a short runway, I should say. Or, you know, they it's been like a mix of Space Ghost with other Hanna-Barbera characters, like in the Future Quest books. Yeah. But I thought, oh, Space Ghost has these amazing, iconic villains. I mean, Alex Toth was throwing out fastball after fastball. And so we're able to kind of pit Space Ghost against as many of these iconic villains as we can fit. You know, if you're looking forward to the Council of Doom, you're going to see all of them. You're going to see a few more names that are kind of iconic. You might see a few names that are deeper cuts that you might not expect. But yeah, being able to kind of do that, we're able to have this kind of high flying cosmic adventure that, you know, has its moments of drama, but also has its moments of humor and wonder. And we're able to kind of view that also through the point of view of these two, teenage orphans, Jan and Jace. And we get to see what they bring to the dynamic and how they change Space Ghost's life and vice versa. As you'll see from our first issue, when you first meet Space Ghost, he's been on this lonely crusade to stop space pirates and criminals and hijackers for some time. He's been a little isolated on Ghost Planet. And when Jan and Jace finally wind up into his orbit, you know, his life was not built for kids. And so he's going to have to kind of roll with that, and they're going to have to roll with that. But I kind of like that it's a study in contrast, that, you know, Space Ghost, when I turned in my pitch for Dynamite, something I said in the very first page is, this is Space Ghost, and this is the story of how he found his humanity again. And it's through these kids.
Right.
I think that is something that I think you'll fall in love with those characters pretty quickly. You know, we're already fairly far in so far with the production on this book. You know, I'm rounding the bases for what I guess I would consider the end of our first arc.
Okay.
And Jonathan Lau is moving like a demon through pages. He's already got a couple issues already in the can.
Nice.
So it's, yeah, it's just a fun story. And it's one that does bring Space Ghost back to his roots as like a, as a traditional superhero. But it's not, I wouldn't say that this is going to be a grim and gritty approach to the character whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think between Batman the Animated Series and Batman the Long Halloween is kind of that tonal sweet spot that that we're operating in. But getting to see him fight all these different villains, there's so many different concepts that we can play with that it really gives us a wide variety of different stories to tell. I will also add that we're doing a lot of done-in-ones for this.
Oh, wow. That's such a rarity in today's market to do these one shots and done in ones, or rather, because the difference in one shots are books that are like solo, like volumes, but done in ones are just a complete story in one issue. How many pages are you looking at here?
Yeah, we're doing 22 pages a month, and I look to books like Ryan North's Fantastic Four and Steve Orlando's Scarlet Witch and Jed McKay's Moon Knight. Mm. You know that I think. Especially the way that's kind of the industry is trending right now, you know, people want self-contained chunks that they want to be able to pick up an issue of Space Ghost and know that they are going to get a full Space Ghost adventure. There's no fat on the bone here. And so we're going to be doing a lot of done-in-ones, primarily done-in-ones. We will kind of save our two-parters for like the biggest of bads.
Yeah, when you need the extra page real estate to like tell the big story.
Well, when we want to put Space Ghost really on his heels, then we'll have a two-parter or even maybe the occasional three-parter. But yeah, we are doing a lot of done-in-ones. I've planned a pretty generous runway so far that Dynamite has offered us. You know, knock on wood, barring any catastrophe, this should be the longest run on a book that I've done to date.
Wow.
And so yeah, you know, it's just it Space Ghost has such a deep bench of characters and concepts to explore, and so I could write this thing as long as they'll let me.
Yeah,
you know, it's such a fun concept, and these characters are really just they're very engaging. You know, they're already kind of surprising me in new and interesting ways, and. Yeah, you know, it's just kind of seeing not just one hero kind of coming into his own, but seeing four.
Three. Yeah, right.
You know.
Now, admittedly, Space Ghost is a bit of a blind spot for me. Sure. I'm intimately familiar with when he was a talk show host, which obviously is not necessarily in canon here, but I was familiar with him only set against the like Hanna-Barbera context, you know, the Herculoids and Space Ghost and whatnot. Sure. So I'm very in the weeds when it comes to what exactly is Space Ghost's origin? Without giving away too much, can you explain to a couple of the viewers who might also be in the same boat as me, where I'm like, okay, so I'm down on the look, and I like the concept that you're laying out for where his journey is going to end up, or where it's going. But where does he begin, and what's the story here? Like,
it's a great question.
Yeah.
So the good news for anybody in your situation is that you know, as far as the cartoons were concerned, Space Ghost had no origin.
Exactly. You know? They just like, here you go. Here's the concept.
He just shows up, for it. You know, he's fully formed. He's already got these sidekicks. They are just going on adventures.
Right.
So as far as our book is concerned, without spoiling too much, we will get into it a little bit as the series kind of unfolds. But as you know, we will see Space Ghost sort of already in action by the time that Jan and Jace meet him in issue one. But as we'll see, you know, he comes to this from a place of tragedy. You know, he is sort of he's the sole survivor of his own colony, which has turned into what is now being referred to as the Ghost Planet. And as a result, you know, he's been on this crusade for years trying to stop pirates and interstellar criminals and hijackers from kind of preying on the defenseless. The way that I had kind of pitched the story originally was just the galaxy is a wide place. And so just based on a sense of scale and statistics, the Galactic Patrol is never going to be able to stop everyone, every evil doer, even if they're operating at their most functional.
Right.
It's too much ground to cover. Pirates know, oh, hey, it's a distant colony. the police are never going to show up in time. Let's pick them off. And that's where Space Ghost is operating right now, is that, oh, if he hears of Space Colony Omicron being attacked, he's going to try to intercept and save what he can. And in this case, in issue one, that's Jan and Jace. So yeah, you know, we'll see a little bit of sort of why is he doing this. But yeah, you know, it's in a lot of ways, this is a book about survivors. And that, you know, Space Ghost and Jan and Jace, their inciting tragedies mirror each other in a way, and they kind of interlock in an interesting way, in that, you know, this is a found family. And I think no one involved in that is really ready for that at first. And if anything, they're kind of dealing with that in a very begrudging way. We've got a very fun bit in issue two, with Jan and Jace exploring Ghost Planet for the first time. And suffice to say, it's not exactly the most child-proofed of areas, of locations. I say that, like, if you put Space Ghost in a room with a pirate when we first meet him, he knows exactly what to do. Right. But, like, his social skills probably could use a little work. Like, I think he's kind of like a B-minus human being by the time.
Sure.
And that's, I think, the beauty of this book. In the same way that something like, you know, the way that Robin would irrevocably change Batman. This is that, but I think arguably even more committed. Whereas Batman, there's the generational aspect. You know, there's a wide Bat family, but it's so rare that they're all in the same room together.
Right.
It's, you know, Space Ghost has these kids. They're not getting replaced. They're not, you know, he's not slotting them in and out. They're not, and to be honest, you know, they're not at a stage where they can kind of survive on their own. Without spoiling too much, we will see by the end of issue one, why does Space Ghost take these kids in versus just dropping them off at the nearest orphanage? And we will be answering that by the end of the first issue.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, they're just really fun characters. Honestly, watching the interplay between all of them, I think is a real treat to write as a writer. And I think, you know, this book is very much, it's obviously it's about Space Ghost, but you know, it's also about the kids. I consider it an ensemble book. One of the, I think, biggest influences on my writing in total, it's Devin Grayson's work on Batman Gotham Knights. And if you haven't read that book, it's sensational. I believe they have one or two trades out. But that was a book about Batman and his ongoing relationships with his various sidekicks, but also members of the Justice League. And it was that emotion that really got me. That made me fall in love with Batman as a character. And that's something that we're really trying to channel in Space Ghost, is that we've got plenty of cosmic action, but I want to make sure that there's still like a human heart beating underneath all of this, to really kind of give readers something to invest in emotionally.
Yeah, sure. I love that this is coming from a place where you are approaching this character with humanity and infusing a sense of family. And, you know, there is this option to explore the kind of like fun of a singular superhero kicking ass and taking names, but also through the lens of a couple of kids where, you know, older readers might be like, this is awesome, but if you were 12 or 13, it might be kind of scary and terrifying and traumatizing in some ways. Reminds me it just reminds me of like your approach to multiple characters who have had, you know, childhood experiences that have informed how they become adults.
Yeah, and I will say, just so anybody who caught the reference to my first book, Spencer and Locke, I promise we're not doing like the Robert Pattinson's the Batman version of Space Ghost. It is. I think very much it's an adventure book, and there is some degree of drama to it. But also, like, that's why I love writing the kids, and I think that does speak to, I think, my first work in Spencer and Locke, granted not to those extremes, is that that was a book that was about drama, and then we could kind of slip in some humor to kind of leaven that storyline.
Sure.
And that's what the kids bring to that. You know, I love, you know, Space Ghost is kind of sort of this gruff protector who, you know, he's a little rough around the edges, but, you know, his grit and determination and his amazing suite of powers, thanks to his power bands and Invisobelt, have been kind of carrying him through his adventures to date. But you see the kids, you know, something that really speaks personally to me is my younger siblings are triplets. And so I know sort of those dynamics between multiples very, very well. So for me, you know, seeing Jan and Jace, you know, the first question was like, okay, who's born first?
Of course, they always ask that question.
Yeah. So for me, you know, Jan's the oldest. She's the thoughtful one, the responsible one. I think she's kind of put in that niche that a lot of young women are in their families, especially when they're the only girl, is that like, she's the responsible one. She thinks things through when Jace or even Space Ghost can't always be bothered, right. But she's also the one that calls out Space Ghost and his crap. you know, we have a really fun beat in one of the issues where like she, you know, she and Space Ghost get into it and Space Ghost just kind of hightails it out of there because he would much rather fight like an energy monster than he would, you know, dealing with the wrath of a 14-year-old girl.
Sure.
And I think a lot of single dads can probably, you know, appreciate that. Like he is kind of the ultimate single dad in this book. But Jan's also, you know, she's tough. She's, you know, she's a crack shot with a blaster. She's the one in our very first issue when space pirates take over their colony. Jace is like, what do we do? And she's like, well, she has the blaster. And she's like, if we go down fighting, we go down fighting. So she's really, I think, like the heart of the book in a lot of ways. And then Jace is super fun. He's kind of the id to her superego. He's very impulsive. It's sort of, I don't know if we'll ever get to it in the text, but the way that I've sort of approached the character is he strikes me as like, you know, he's probably dyslexic. He was probably not great in like a school setting, but he's so good with his hands. He's like an instinctive mechanic. He's a natural born pilot. He's also like a little impulsive. You know, he's the one that would kind of leap without looking necessarily. Sure. He's also one that's like very quick with a joke. You know, he's really the one that like tries to keep both Jan and Space Ghost happy.
Right. I see. Keeping it all like together. Right.
Yeah. You know, so I feel like Jan and Jace both kind of approach their own individual tragedies, I think in like opposite ways, but complementary ways. But yeah, Jace, I always laugh, you know, he's sort of like, he's emotionally probably a little closer to Blip than he is 30 level to Jan. And then Blip is kind of, you know, he's I would say he's the linchpin of the whole series.
Is the monkey.
Is their pet monkey Blip. You know, Blip stands for something that you will find out in issue one.
Cool.
But yeah, he's very important to everything going on. He's Jan and Jace's family pet. You know, he's loyal to a fault. He would do anything for these kids. And I, you know, it's one of those things that, watching the original cartoons and rewatching all those episodes, you know, it's a choice to add in like a pet monkey.
Oh yeah.
Into the mix. But it's one of those choices that's so distinct that like, I felt like I couldn't ignore it. I couldn't just sweep Blip under the rug. He is kind of he's the mascot, but also like, he's the one who like, in certain ways, sometimes he's like Wolverine in the Hellfire Club, where like, you know, back then, but this was before Wolverine was Wolverine. You're like, oh, that little guy, like kind of just like pulled out a win out of nowhere. And that is sometimes Blip. we do have an issue, a Blip centric issue planned for later down the line. I'm hoping to write that in the next month.
Cool.
That if all goes according to plan, might be my favorite issue of the whole run.
Nice.
So keep your tissues handy for that.
Oh, one. Oh no.
that'll be a really sweet but heartbreaking issue. But I promise I'm not killing the monkey. Don't ever think that. The cool thing about writing a book like this that I do consider to be an ensemble book is we're not we're not skimping out on anybody. Like, we're never going to have an issue where Space Ghost doesn't show up. We're never going to have an issue where Jan or Jace or Blip don't show up. They will be in every single issue as long as I'm writing it, because they're just really fun and interesting and engaging characters. And the more I get to explore them, the more I fall in love with them.
Yeah.
And I'm really, I'm looking forward to readers joining us on that journey and falling in love with these characters the same way that we have.
Well, and I'm not asking for any spoilers in this regard, but I should, I'd feel I'd be remiss if, since my only exposure to this is Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, we'll be getting any inklings of Zorak, Moltar, or Brak.
All three will be in this.
Nice.
one of them, you will not have to wait very long. Mm-hmm. Another one I am actually in the process of writing right now.
Nice.
The third one, I'm writing, that's the next issue, after the one I'm writing now. So, suffice to say, you're going to see all the iconic characters that you're expecting, Zorak, Brak, Metalis, Creature King, the Widow, Moltar. You will eventually see the Council of Doom come together. And we'll see a couple other interesting faces along the way.
And how's the collaboration going with Jonathan Lau? Yeah.
Yeah, Jonathan's terrific. Honestly, when I saw his pages when we were putting together the team, I was so struck by Jonathan has this style that's like very hyperkinetic. Like, you really can nail the motion and energy of an action sequence. But he also has a real versatility to him. Like, he's not just an action guy. He also really nails the character moments. We have a bit in issue 2 that I had written, and I thought, oh, this would be like a fun moment. And then Jonathan turned in the pages, and I was like, I think this might be the best looking sequence I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he then, switches gears to, Jan and Jason Space Ghost in the base. And like, they're just looking so human, and like there's a lot of acting and body language that Jonathan put together for this. So he's the real deal. He also, he draws like a machine. I joke that it's sometimes like writing with the Terminator after you.
Yeah.
That like Jonathan like turns in scripts every he can turn in an issue in about 3 weeks, like clockwork. Wow. And so that keeps me on my toes and keeps me kind of pushing ahead. He really, he's doing such a cool job with this, and he's really kind of putting his own stamp on the visuals of it all. But I like the fact that, he recognizes that this is an ensemble book. It would be so easy to kind of say, oh, the sidekicks, we're going to sort of draw them real little and put them in the background. And he recognizes that this is a book about four characters. And so he doesn't skimp out on any of them. And they all look great. They all look very dynamic and just very engaging. And I will say, he's teaming up with Andrew Dalhouse on colors. Andrew's terrific. He and I worked together on a short story with Miles Morales over at Marvel.
Gotcha.
I'm a big fan of Andrew's work, and he's just absolutely crushing it on Space Ghost. And then rounding out the team is a letterer, Taylor Esposito. He's been a buddy of mine for a long time. Taylor is one of the reasons that I was able to get in the industry in the first place. He introduced me to my very first colorist on Spencer and Locke, the late Jason Smith. And so I owe Taylor a lot, and he and I have talked about working together for many years. All we had done was a two-page anthology story that hasn't seen the light of day yet. So being able to work with Taylor it's a real treat. He is just an immaculate professional. The work looks really good thanks to him. And he's very fast as well. I just looked at a lettering pass for one of our issues last week. And I gave our editor, Joe Rybant, some notes that morning, and I think I had a pass by later that night.
Nice.
So, it's just, we're working. It's a really amazing team who I think I think we're all very excited about Space Ghost, and we're very excited about not just being able to kind of tap into the nostalgia of this property, but also how do we look forward? How do we kind of recontextualize this character and his supporting cast and his wider universe in this new continuity? And that, I think, was a real, it was a real gift. Being able to work, you know, I like seeing somebody like what Declan Shalvey and Drew Moss are doing on Thundercats. You know, had a little bit of a history behind all of it, and a little bit more continuity. Whereas Space Ghost, you know, it's 5-6 minutes. It's just, you know, Space Ghost is fighting a guy, you get sort of a little bit of context about that guy. So seeing the way that Jonathan is kind of helping put his stamp on all that, it's really impressive. It's really cool. He's already taken a really interesting take on a very iconic Space Ghost, actually a couple of Space Ghost villains. You can see in our preview pages, you know, we've got Tensit and we've got Brago, we've got One Eye, and we've got Lurker. You know, those were characters that I thought were like really interesting in the original cartoon. And they all kind of shared that theme of like kind of space piracy. Yeah. So making them a gang was kind of cool. And, you know, just like a way to like let the fans know, like, we've done our homework on all of this. I rewatched every single episode of Space Ghost. I took detailed notes on every episode, the 60s run, the 80s revival, every comic appearance, you know, including the Joe Kelly run,
DC run, yeah,
Quest. The Comico one shot by with Steve Rude.
Oh wow.
You know, the Gold Key one shot. I mean, everything that I could get my hands on, I read it and I took notes on it. The only thing longer than my pitch document to Dynamite, which was 30 pages long, was my my note document in the 40s. That's like the beauty of a book like this, is that you don't need to come having done any homework. I did all the homework for you. But if you have watched all those episodes, if you are a fan of all of them, we are cramming in as many Easter eggs as possible. You know, whenever possible, I'm trying to use planets that were mentioned in the original series.
Cool.
You know, there are even little bits and pieces like Staranto Titanium, which is sort of a Space Ghost's in-universe version of like Adamantium. You know, we've got a little nod to that early on in the series that will turn into something a little bit more complicated down the line for him. It's just, you know, it's one of those things that it's just when I was offered the assignment, I saw the potential. There was so much of it. And being able to use this longer runway of comics to explore that and to give extra context and to add little wrinkles to these characters to really populate them in an organic way. It's a gift. And I can't wait for people to see what we got planned.
And the first issue drops in May, correct?
Yes,
I understand May 1st. It's May 1st.
Yes, so week before the Wednesday before Free Comic Book Day. Wow. So be sure to call your local comic shop to pre-order. We've got a ton of amazing covers. We've got Francesco Bettina doing our main cover, Bjorn Behrens doing an amazing cover that we showed in our teaser. Jay Lee doing just astounding work. It's my first Jay Lee cover and hopefully not the last. And then Michael Cho doing amazing retro themed covers. I've been told that he's committed to 12 issues. It's very exciting to have them all on board. And we've got all sorts of, we got foil variants, virgin variants, line art variants, blank covers. So you really can pick your poison at your local comic shop, or you can pre-order multiple, because I can tell you my puppy's kibble does not come cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we wrap up, there's also another series that's all yours, The Devil That Wears My Face, over at Mad Cave. We're on issue 5 at this point.
Yes.
You know, a lot of nice family stuff going on, but let's you know, talking about the horror, what can we expect from the rest of the series?
The Devil That Wears My Face, I'm having such a blast on that book. For those who aren't familiar with it, the pitch is Face Off meets The Exorcist. It's about Father Franco Vieri. He's an 18th century Vatican priest who's dealing with a pretty profound crisis of faith. And he's tasked with performing an exorcism on the son of a Spanish nobleman. And the ritual backfires. So Vieri finds himself trapped in this stranger's body while Vieri's body has been taken over by the demon known as Legion, who immediately hightails it to the Vatican to wreak havoc. And issue 5 just came out, and without spoiling too much, Legion has taken out just about every bit of competition that he could have had in the Vatican. He has climbed to a status that I don't think even he necessarily expected. Alex Cormack is drawing the book. Actually, he's finished art on the book. Really sensational stuff. I gave our last notes in the lettering pass last week. So the book, I think just short of one last final pass to make sure that there's no typos. The book's done. I'm very proud of how it came together. It's my first horror book. And we've still got one big twist left in this book that we've been eagle-eyed readers maybe might see what's coming. I've certainly been kind of leaving some breadcrumbs across the whole series, but so far nobody's guessed it. And I think when issue 6 comes out in May, you'll get a sense of it'll really turn the whole thing on its ear.
Cool.
In a way that I think will really speak to Father Vieri's journey, but also I think really speaks to me personally. So you'll find out more about that in May. But tell your local comic shop to pre-order The Devil That Wears My Face number 6 along with Space Ghost. I promise you won't be disappointed.
We got Space Ghost, Devil That Wears My Face. What else can we look forward to from David Pepos in 2024, man?
Sure. Well, let's see. I'm gearing up for our third and final Kickstarter for the OZ. So we will be doing that soon. We're still kind of figuring out the date for that. We'll probably do that after the first issue or two of Space Ghost comes out, just to make sure that that has some nice runway. What else can I talk about? Let's see. I've got another creator-owned project that I'm hoping I'll be able to talk about later this year. If not later this year, early next year. And then I'm working on some more Big Two work right now that I don't know when we'll be able to talk about it. But hopefully sooner versus later. It's with an interesting, fun character that you probably wouldn't guess, but definitely kind of fits some of the other Big Two work that I've done in the past.
Nice. Where else can people find one-stop shopping when it comes to sure. your work?
Yeah, well, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at PeposD. You can go to my website, davidpepos.com. You can follow me on Facebook at David Pepos Comics. You can also subscribe to my newsletter, Pep Talks, at bit.ly/pepnews.
Nice. All links are in the description below, of course, and we'll see you guys next time with more. But David, thank you so much for being here, man.
Oh,
and thank you so much for your insights. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about Space Ghost.
I can't wait for you to read it.
It's a blind spot for me that I'm like looking forward to finally scratching, because I'm like, I've been looking for a good jumping on point for this character, because I've always loved the look and the design and the character and the concept. And I'm like, I should probably read about this guy at some point.
I'm very excited for us to be your first. This is, like I said, you don't have to watch any Space Ghost to understand it. This is very much this is a character driven book, and on top of all the cosmic adventure. But for those of you who only know Space Ghost from his talk show, I'm very excited to remind you why Space Ghost is the greatest superhero in the universe.
Nice. All right, so long, everybody. Thanks a lot for watching.